Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am Zach.
And I'm one of your hosts, John. That speedrunning. Wasn't ready for it.
I'm speedrunning because this episode is going to be fucking short, John.
Alrighty. Well.
And I think our dear listeners deserve a break.
We've had some long episodes lately. Over the last couple weeks, there have been some dense ones.
Yeah.
I think our "we're just here on your commute" has now turned into "we're here for both your going to and coming from work."
It's true. And I also think that because you and I both work from home, the concept of how long it takes people to get to work has become a little bit foreign to us. My commute's about 45 seconds.
Well, it depends on how many cats bother me on the way downstairs, but fair. Yeah, sometimes one of them just likes to sit in the middle of the stairway and I'm like, "Hey, fucking asshole."
Yeah. Can't. That's a major roadblock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll sleep on the couch to cut my commute in half. all right. These are bad jokes. This is a terrible way to start an episode.
But we both work from home. That's the point.
I hope your commute is as short as a Dune Minute episode.
Well,
historically, the length of a Dune Minute episode. If it's not, sorry. So we are here to talk about minute 52 through 53. This is a lot of looking nervous.
Yep. That's a lot of just anxious waiting.
Yeah.
I think is what one of the things that I have listed in my notes here.
So. Yeah. So we start with Stilgar looking nervous at Paul as he's climbing up the dune. We cut over to Paul as he's walking across the top of this ridge.
Definitely taking a few minutes to catch his breath.
Yes. He's breathing so heavy.
I think this is the first time, maybe the second time, when someone has actually been physically exerting themselves walking up sand. So the first time that we called this out
yes, yeah.
was in part one. It was episode 90 or whatever of
when they were running up the dune.
When Paul and Jessica were running up the dune after being after their escape from the Harkonnen Ornithopter.
Right.
Words are hard for me right now. And they just run up the dune, no problem. Look at Arakeen on fire in the distance.
Right. No visible signs of being out of breath at all.
Yeah. There were no visible signs of being out of breath before Paul had pounded some drum sand.
Yeah.
In part one. Obviously, after they were dead sprinting to the rocks, it was a different story. But
right.
But Paul was a little bit tired from his sand walking as a drunk lizard when he thought he saw Jameis.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's obviously winded here.
Yeah.
So clearly in part two, their ability to just walk up dunes without, getting winded has been taken away from them. So
yeah.
It's worth pointing out.
It is. It is. And speaking of drum sand, you mentioned drum sand.
Yeah.
That is going to be a key player today.
It is. And I was hoping that you also were ready to talk about some drum sand again, because it's been a minute since we talked about it.
It is. I don't have the specific definition down, but we'll get to that in a second. So Paul drops his gear and he kind of kneels down and he picks up a clump of sand from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the sand is. That's where they make it.
Yeah. Go on.
And then he begins punching the ground. And what he's checking for here is resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled up the script, and that is actually the word that they use in the script to, give the actor some direction. They're looking for resonance. And when his fist hits the sand, it is, this is kind of a dull thud.
Yeah. It's just your typical, what you would expect when you go outside and punch the ground for whatever reason you would be inclined to do so.
So, it just occurred to me that Paul is literally pounding sand right now. Oh man.
Go fucking pound sand, kid.
Oh, fun. So after he, you know, gives the ground a couple of good right hooks, the camera cuts back over to Chani and she's like, fuck, that's not the good spot. She says lower under her breath. And through their, you know, telepathic connection, I guess Paul
immediately hears her and he's like, oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He picks up on the idea. He also knows that's not a good spot. They want something that is a lot more resonant, a lot more useful for the thumper. So he starts to go down the dune, down the side of this dune that he's on. And here is a micro beeve that I have.
Okay.
So
small beeves.
Small beeves. Yep. As you can see from the definition of drum sand, mm-hmm. it forms when typically on flat plains.
Correct.
Now Paul is very much not on a flat plane.
Paul's right on now. Like a 45 degree angle.
Right. Right. It's definitely a very, very steep slope. And he's having to like walk with his body sideways a bit to even get down it.
Yeah.
This is not a place where drum sand would form.
No,
now,
not at all.
Is what he, you know, finds in the second location he deems good enough, because we can hear the audible change in resonance as he punches his new location.
The very audible change.
Yeah. And you can even hear it in his footsteps going down the dune as well.
Shout out to the sound design.
Yeah. Really cool. So I said, you know, this is not a place where drum sand would form naturally.
Typically.
Yes.
It's not to say that it's impossible, but.
Yeah. It's just. I
wonder if it's because of the size of this dune, because this is a massive dune that he's on. So maybe because there's potentially more space underneath it, it does somehow allow for the conditions for drum sand to exist.
Maybe so. The real explanation is that this is a movie.
Sure.
And none of this exists.
That said, from the encyclopedia, there are four conditions necessary for sand to sing.
Okay. Lay them on me.
Yeah. As a reminder, because we did talk about this in all the way back in season one.
Yeah.
It's been over 60 episodes since then. First, sand grains must be of approximately equal size. Second, the grains must be bonded together. This bonding is most commonly produced by the chemical deposition of water-soluble salts on the grain surfaces. Third, the packing density must be uniform. And finally, the underlying bedrock must be essentially parallel to the sand surface. And that is where our biggest discrepancy is.
Yep.
Now, that being said...
Parallel does not mean horizontal.
Right.
Is that what you're getting at?
Well, it could be that. Or it could be that Paul has found, because I'm not a geologist, but I know how growing up in Florida... What?
Really?
Yeah, I know. Sorry to break that.
Fucking fooled me.
Growing up in Florida, there were a lot of springs around. Now, water and sand are two obviously very different things. But one of the things with the springs in Florida is that you would get large...
And you're talking about like aquifers.
Yeah.
Water-based springs, not what you find in your mattress.
Yes.
Okay.
You get large... for lack of a better word, horizontal caverns. But okay. Occasionally, you know, you would get some small vertical slices that find their way up to the surface.
Okay.
So, not saying it's direct one-to-one, but it may be a possibility that you may have the other three conditions of the uniform sand grains, the bonded together, and the water-soluble salts on the grain surfaces find their way near the top of this dune where Paul is now punching.
Right.
And then that further resonates down into the wider part near the base of this very large dune.
Okay.
Is that exactly the way it is?
Maybe.
We will probably never know unless we can like grill one of the writers on this and just be like, hey, like what's up? But that is what the Dune Encyclopedia says are the four conditions necessary for drum sand to exist.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on board. I think I convinced myself that this is a moot point when I said horizontal does not, or parallel does not mean horizontal. it could absolutely form on a slope.
Yeah. If the bedrock was also sloped.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Okay, cool. So he finds, but the point is he finds it.
Yeah.
He finds a patch of this.
Or it could just be because of movie.
Because of movie. Exactly. So he takes the device out that Stilgar gave him, which is the thumper that Stilgar that tuned. Stilgar
tuned himself.
Now, how do you think one tunes a thumper?
Well, you and I are both musicians. How do you tune a guitar?
You twist a string around a pole. Well,
you twist a post that then tightens the string.
Okay. A string gets twisted around a pole and held at that tension.
Yeah. Probably a series of springs internally that are adjusted to various tensions for a better resonant sound when the hammer strikes the piston.
Could be. I don't have any answer to this. I'm just a question I threw out. I do have a theory that I'll talk about either Thursday or Friday this week.
Okay.
And specifically revolves around the tuning of the thumper. So I'm just going to leave you in suspense on that one.
Damn.
Because we have a couple of seconds left to get through in this minute. So Paul shoves the spiky end into the sand.
It's more of a slow insert into the...
He's making full eye contact as he slowly
inserts his spike into the sand.
Yeah. Hell he's yeah. Sensual with it, you know? This is an important... It's important. He doesn't want to rush this. So he gets... once the thumper is in the sand, he like twists a ring on the thumper.
And we had seen this dial all the way back the first time that we had seen the thumper as well.
Right. Part one. Right.
So it's not like this dial is specific to this one that's Stilgar tuned or anything.
No, this is the basic design.
I will say this also to the sound design people, that dial clicking sound.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
Fuck yeah.
It's very mechanical, just crisp and clear sound. It's so good.
I love an analog mechanical click.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to get back to that, man. I love technology. Obviously, we're technology people. But I just love a good mechanical switch and a mechanical dial and shit like that. It's so good.
It makes my brain tingle in all the right ways.
The children yearn for mechanical devices. We don't get to see it first activate because the camera cuts up to Paul and we hear it though. We hear it kind of the thumper rise up and then fall. And this is really the first, at least in this movie, the first like close up sound of the thumper that we've gotten. We hear
the crank inside.
Yeah.
Click, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Click, click, click. And then we stop and end our minute right before that second thump.
Yeah, exactly. So we have praised the sound of the thumper before. It's a lot better in this, the part two, than it is in part one.
I mean, it's still very good.
It was awesome in part one. Yeah. So it just goes to show like, this is really, really cool. This is the first time that we get to be super up close with all the machinations of the thumper.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is where the minute ends right there. I don't have any book notes on this one because I pretty much said them all yesterday.
Well, I think that means that we just need to wrap up then.
So, all right.
In the meantime,
hey, look at us. We found content. We were able to stretch this one a little bit.
Shit. Yeah, we were. God damn. Alrighty, well, in the meantime, you can find us online on Blue Sky. We're at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch as well. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. We'll see you later.
See ya.